She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we love that concept. Thank you so much for joining us today. The show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson. They are a proud partner of Mrs. Green's World, and my thanks to them for their support and all they are doing with their Going Green team and their 7 dealerships to make a big green difference in our community and in turn for the planet. Another important content-rich show today. Paul Salou, and I hope if I'm saying his name wrong that he will correct me when he comes on. He is the CEO of Harvest Power, and it's a company that's dedicated to harnessing the full potential of organic materials by recycling energy and nutrients back into our local communities through its energy gardens and its production of nutrient-rich soils, mulches, and fertilizers. And believe me, there is so much more we're going to share with you today. That sounds complicated. If you are listening on your computer and not on your iPhone or Droid, I encourage you to pull up their website, harvestpower.com, so you can see the breadth and depth of their company and the hope that they provide for our future. They operate facilities throughout North America, in British Columbia, Ontario, California, and throughout the Mid-Atlantic, Midwest states, and Northeastern United States. I want you to know a lot about them because of the impact they're having. And they were most recently named one of the top emerging companies of the year by New England Energy Council. So I'm certain you are going to want to stay here with me. Just a few more quick announcements. Mrs. Green's World is also proudly a part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. My show airs every Monday and Tuesday on that network, and you can access them by visiting dreamvisions7radio.com. Please remember, I'm here live every Saturday at noon, Arizona time, and now Pacific Standard Time at MrsGreensWorld.com, and you can find out who our great guests are going to be and everything going on in Mrs. Green's World, which there is a lot going on right now, by following me on Facebook and Twitter, and always spread the word that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. My website, MrsGreensWorld.com. And then this is the time in my show for a quick shout out about one of our sponsors, EcoBella with 2 C's. This is another company that's making a difference in a rather toxic-laden industry. And that is a gross understatement, that of skincare products and cosmetics. There's nothing better than I can suggest when I do these shout outs each week than encourage you to think and not have me tell you what to think by visiting their website at ecobella.com. And not unlike our guest today, look at them not just as a product supplier, but as a company. What type of corporate culture do they have? Are they walking the walk? Are all aspects of their company committed to sustainability? Or are they just selling a green product? And believe me, I've learned to know the difference and to vet companies very differently. Lots of companies selling green products are not at their corporate headquarters green. They're not what I call systemically green. Are they giving back to the community? Are they raising the collective consciousness for the greater good? And needless to say, since we are partnering with them at Mrs. Green's World and we are very careful about vetting our partners, this is the kind of company we want to support with and bring to your attention and hopefully decide that you will want to give them your business. I hope you'll take the time to care enough about your health, about what you're putting on your skin, and about the kinds of companies you're doing business with. So check them out. And that's it. That is my big, deep breath. And Paul, thank you very much for being a part of Mrs. Green's World show today. And let's get on with and make it all about you.
Great. Thanks. Great to be on your show. And thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm quite sure the thing, I'm based in Tucson, Arizona, even though the show really goes out internationally, you're probably a lot cooler today than we are here in the Southwest, with the predicted temperatures going to be 101. So dare I ask you what the temperature is where you are?
Well, I'm basically in New England, and Carlisle, Massachusetts, and it's a beautiful first day of fall. So it's about 55 degrees.
That's half, just about half, a little bit over. So, okay, we won't talk about that anymore. Let's get on with the show. I think the concept, when I did the research and got very excited about your show, I think it's always good to give a little bit of background about our guest. And you have more than 25 years experience in the organic industry. So now you're at the helm and CEO of one of the fastest growing clean tech companies, I would say probably in the world. I don't think that's an exaggeration. Give us a little bit of background about how you came to this and started the company. I think it's a little bit over 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I have a farm background. My family, still operates. My brother Mark, a large scale greenhouse and nursery operation in Lebanon, Connecticut. So, I think having an agricultural background, you oftentimes don't really think of farming, as necessarily a sustainable enterprise, but clearly I think you're very dependent upon Mother Nature for sure.
Right, so for our food. Yes, right, you got to close that loop. Good distinction.
So that was my background and from a family business and still in business. As I said, my brother Mark still runs it, but we basically were one of the first to incorporate the use of compost in growing media, and that led me to start a large-scale composting company located in Connecticut, but we had plants throughout the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic called EarthGrow. And we were one of the first large-scale commercial composters in turning materials such as, ag waste, et cetera, into high-quality products. And then from there, was involved with the beginning of the carbon credit trading market, in this country, which has not really gone very far, but that's a whole nother
show.
and then from there, went back into farming and built a company called Backyard Farms, which is a very large scale producer of greenhouse tomatoes, and then started Harvest Power in 2008, and I founded the company with my co-founder Nathan Gilliland, and we've been growing the business ever since.
And it would not be fair to not give a shout out to Martha, Nathan's mom, who is the person responsible for your being on the show today. It's it's all about the moms, and she was very proud of the award that you got and sent an email out to a business group that I'm in, and I, needless to say, got very excited about it. So let's talk about, there are a lot of words that you use in the industry, and when you come to the general public understanding, you're talking about organics and compost in a much larger sense and of supporting global agriculture. Can you just explain that a little bit more?
Well, when you think about renewable energy, for instance, right, oftentimes most people will only talk about wind and solar, right? And I think all kinds of renewable energy is good, but there's also a tremendously great way to make renewable energy out of organic materials. And the organic materials we work with are yards and food, so leaves, grass, brush, past prime, fruits, vegetables, things like that we basically call waste in our society. And many of these materials end up in landfills, and then for there, you're never going to benefit the use of those materials either from an energy source or from a compost or organic fertilizer standpoint. So we basically manage right now a couple million tons and growing at our facilities throughout North America, and we use a technology called anaerobic digestion, which basically, without the presence of oxygen, we basically culture microorganisms, which break down these organic materials. They generate something called biogas. Biogas is a methane-rich gaseous fuel. Methane, of course, is what natural gas is. And then from there, after we go through our anaerobic digestion process, we take the materials out, finish them with a short composting or a drying process, and then basically recover all the nutrients and have stabilized organics that go back to local farms, back to lawns, back to gardens.
And, you know, you call it, I really enjoyed your YouTube video that's on your homepage, because to me, one of the major challenges we face as mainstream America is to understand what's happening in the science of things and how it applies to our lives. Like, it's a closed loop, and people aren't conscious of that. So you call it biomimicry, and it's similar to that of a cow. So you figured out how to make what a cow does happen without the escape of methane gas into the atmosphere, which is a huge challenge. Is that a fair way to say it in the vernacular of the common person?
No, absolutely. And the scientists, where possible, biomimicry, you basically can mimic a already proven natural process. And that's what we do with anaerobic digestion, because as you suggest, that's exactly what occurs inside of a ruminant, and such as a cow. And instead of letting those greenhouse gases and biogas get up in the atmosphere, we capture them and basically turn that into energy, and then also then basically have the organic material after it's been stabilized and all the nutrients. And I think it's really it's a great example of cost-effective sustainability.
So in terms of I don't want to go to the challenges. I want to get to the challenges. One of my biggest sponsors here is the Fairfax Companies, and they do post-construction and landscaping waste. That's what they collect, and all the landscapers use them, and a lot of the landscape, the business community knows the contracts, and they turn the landscaping waste into green waste that they then turn around and sell to places like Frito-Lay for their energy source, because they are powered by green waste. What are the mechanism for me of getting people to change their habits? Where do you collect the waste? Because you need lots of organic waste to turn into energy. So when you are present in the community, what is the process for you to actually acquiring the waste, and how, you know, what's your target market to fuel your supply?
Well, that's a great question. Right now, about two-thirds of the states in the United States and as well as in Canada basically require mandatory recycling of yard waste. That's leaves, grass, and brush.
Right.
So therefore there's some regulatory policy that has benefited. And then what's happened then right now, the dominant way to deal with that is through creation of compost-based soils and mulches. We just end up basically first getting the energy out of it through anaerobic digestion. So that's where a community, if you're in one of those states, you'll basically will have to find a recycling option for you to basically manage that. And then the other major material we work with is food waste. And right now, that's kind of at the beginning. I kind of view where food waste is now is where yard waste was 15 years ago,
right,
when these regulatory bans came in. And now there's about 150 communities and counting every year, and more of them are adopting what we call source separation of organic programs. And then these two organic materials, yard waste and food waste, which together we have close to 80 million tons of these in the United States alone. It's a huge source of renewable energy, and it's a huge source of great compost-based soils and mulches.
And it's massive. One of the things that actually started me on the Mrs. Green's journey was seeing a film by the Pachamama Alliance, of all things, where a woman said, you know, she asks people, where are you going to throw that? And they say, away. And she said, there is no more away. And it stuck with me. It's like, well, we're really at the point where there is no more away. So let's be conscious. I go by our neighborhood and I see the garbage cans full of all the clippings from the trees, and we don't have a lot of grass, thank goodness, but it's like, people, that should not be going in the landfill, and we have a place that's locally owned that you can really do it, because we don't have curbside recycling for it. So let's talk a little bit about the core vision. It's so clear when you visit your website or spend any time listening to some of the videos that you have a really core vision as one of the tenets of your company for sustainability. And let's go through, you know, each one of them a little bit to share that vision for, let's start with landfill diversion. What is your vision for that? And how do you see it rolling out to help the challenges we have with waste?
Well, I mean, you know, yes, we do need landfills, but we are way, way, way too dependent upon them to be throwing away materials, and having them and stay in a landfill. I mean, just to me, without any sort of beneficial reuse capability, is just not good policy. So clearly, we want communities, and the communities that we work with right now are saving money, and then they also then are diverting these organic materials from a landfill, and then that allows then, a green business to come into your community, green construction jobs as we build our plants, green jobs as we run our plants, recycle the energy back to the benefit of the community, and then, of course, have high-quality compost-based soils and mulches for the benefit of the community as well. So I think it touches everything, economic sustainability and environmental sustainability, and landfills are ultimately just huge repositories of just stuff that is put in there and without any potential for beneficial reuse. And so we just think there's a better way.
I think there is a better way, and it's companies like yours that gives me hope, because it can be daunting, because when you talk about the clean tech industry, we need to get there rather quickly from where I sit and the research that I do every week. Let's go back a little bit, because I liked the description that you gave about as a global community, we're losing peak soil. And I understand what that is. Explain to people what it is and why we're losing more than we're building and how unsustainable that is long term.
Well, that's, we've heard about, peak oil and other resource issues, but you've not really heard much about peak soil. And it's something, hey, listen, we take for granted. I mean, the food is plentiful and we've got an amazing agricultural base here in North America, especially the United States. But that is really supported on a 6 to 12 inch layer of topsoil that basically, supports agriculture. So, nature, has through recycling and et cetera, you're always rebuilding and replenishing the soil. But with the intensive agriculture today that is practiced and the normal erosion that occurs from runoff, et cetera, especially when you don't have cover crops on your field, you basically are, we are losing soil, and that's a fact. And so the ability to take these organic materials that we generate that we call waste, which, in our society, which basically can be processed back into great compost-based fertilizers, and to put those back onto the soils, this is what nature intended. This is what we need to do to have a sustainable food production system, here in North America and, for that matter, throughout the world.
So in the states where it is working, and I know I just recently spent some time in Oregon, they have in every restaurant, in the in your homes, they have recycling that you can actually put all your food waste. I mean, every restaurant has a bin you clean your own plate, where you can drop all your food waste into it, and then they take it and it's compostable waste. In the states that do that, how would it get from their collection of that to Harvest Power? Does that make sense? What's the business model? What's the acquisition of the waste, if you will?
Right. And I mean, food establishments basically, they generate food waste, right? That's normal. And so when places that are unlike the example you mentioned about Oregon, that's mixed in with the garbage. It's put into a container out back, and a garbage truck periodically, picks it up and hauls it away and probably, unfortunately, puts it into a landfill. So in places that don't do that, like Oregon, San Francisco, parts of Vancouver, Toronto, and a number of other communities around North America, they'll basically segregate. We call it SSO, source-separated organics.
Okay.
Where basically, the organic waste is separated from the rest of the waste materials generated. So you've got a clean group of organic materials there that is then put into a separate container, again, probably in the back of the establishment, and then similar to the model that I described with the rest of the garbage, a truck comes in and picks up that source-separated organic and then ends up going to a Harvest Power facility, and then we would then turn that into energy and fertilizer, not ore. It's energy and fertilizer, which is why we believe the combination of anaerobic digestion and composting is our two technologies that fit like a hand in a glove.
And it does. And I you know, believe it or not, we're going to have a break quickly, but can you answer this question quickly? We have about 2 minutes till the first break. You use the term energy gardens, and I'd love you to expand on that. It's the first time I've seen those two words together. Explain the energy garden concept.
Well, anaerobic digestion is a biologically driven energy production technology. We are using microorganisms to basically create energy. And as the organic waste is broken down, the metabolic byproducts from these microorganisms is something called biogas, right? So CH4 and CO2,
right,
which we then can convert into energy. The residual material after we extract the energy is now digested organic material, and then all the nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, micronutrients that were in the organic waste when we put it into the digester are there when we take it out. And then we then dry or further process that, and then we make a great product that can go to support plant growth. So this notion of energy and garden is really unique in the Harvest Power model, and that's why we call our digesters energy gardens.
And that is why you won one of the top emerging companies. And, you know, I call you a thought leader. So everybody, just stay here with us. And Paul, just say the pronunciation. Is it Salu?
Salu, yes.
Salu, okay. I thought I got it right. Paul Salu, CEO of Harvest Power, a company that is truly making a difference globally by what they are doing in the United States and Canada right now. Stay here with us. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And Paul will be right back. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what does a clean tech company really mean and some of the challenges you're facing as you grow rapidly. Stay here with me. We'll be right back.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years, and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Are you thinking about swapping out your old items for new? Think Habitat when you do. Don't trash it. Have a store it. Habitat for Humanity Tucson will resell your donated furniture, appliances, and building supplies and use the proceeds to build affordable homes in the greater Tucson area. Call now at 520-889-7200 for a free pickup. You can bring your donations to Habitat's Habitat Store at 935 West Grant Road, just a quarter mile east of I-10. For more information, go to habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we're certainly giving you a lot to think about today. We have another important content-rich show today, as I said in the beginning. Paul Salu, CEO of Harvest Power, and they most recently won the one of the top 100 emerging companies of the year by the New England Energy Council. So I am certain you are glad you're joining us, and we're learning a lot. Paul, let's talk about the concept of what does it really mean to be a clean tech company? It's so multifaceted. So can you talk about the aspects of what that really means?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the way I define clean tech, right, I think you need to hit really three different things. One is, I think if you're a clean tech company, what you're doing should have an impact about the reduction around the use of fossil fuels. I think secondly, your technology should improve performance. And thirdly, and I think this is important as well, it should do it at lower cost. And I think the notion of, yes, you can do things that are great for the environment, but it's going to cost you a lot more, I think that's not what we're trying to do at Harvest. And I don't think that doesn't embody what I think the word clean tech means.
It creates a huge barrier, especially on the consumer end, and there are many examples of that. So I could not agree with you more. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but you are absolutely spot on with that one.
Oh, absolutely. And so, I mean, you look at what we do. I mean, we were able to go to communities, we're able to lower their cost of the management of these organic waste streams. We're able to then replace fossil fuels by creating renewable energy, and then also then create, you know, basically great compost-based soils and mulch products to improve the performance of any kind of ag or lawn or garden from that standpoint. So I think what Harvest does, I think we hit those three things well.
And in one aspect of what you do with providing materials for clean energy, green energy, I'd love to understand the business model, because I am first and foremost a business person. Do you partner with municipalities? I mean, how does the mechanism actually work from my backyard and my waste to to a Frito-Lay, for example? I mean, what are the steps and what role do you play? Does that question make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I'm like, our business model is we put up the capital.
Okay.
So if a community or a business, a generator of organic waste materials, we basically would come into the community. We'd want to enter into a contract so that we would end up having a long-term supply agreement. And then from there, we would put up all the capital to build the processing, the renewable energy facility. And then, you know, our revenue model, again, we charge less than the landfill. So from that standpoint, that's one source of revenue. We generate renewable energy. That's another source of revenue. And then we sell the high-quality compost-based soils and mulches. That's the third source of revenue.
Okay.
So we put up the capital, and then that way then we de-risk it from a community for our business, and then we guarantee them savings.
And you would approach, for example, in Tucson, there's the city that does waste collection and the county. Would the collection mechanism literally be the same, and then the waste would be sorted out to you and your facility, like co-located with a, you know, like I just went to the grand opening of a re-community recycling center yesterday. So what is the delivery mechanism to get the waste to you? There's the question.
Right. And so if it's a business that is generating organic waste materials, if it's sufficient enough in volume, we'll build a plant right there. If it doesn't have enough volume, it would go into a container. A truck would then be contracted, and they would then bring it to the Harvest Processing Center. So from that standpoint, usually most communities have a drop-off area where that you can put your yard waste in, or if not, you have curbside collection, same type thing, so long as it is collected under the term source-separated organic, SSO.
Okay.
We don't believe in sorting it out from the rest of the garbage stream.
Okay, it doesn't work. No,
right.
I agree. It doesn't work. One of the things that you talked about on one of the videos or something I was researching that I agree with, and I think it's so important now and forever, is the concept of clean technology not being a part of a political conversation as a partisan issue. It's a bipartisan issue, and you use the term, it's a human being issue, which is certainly the place from which I come. Why are these conversations polarized in the political arena? Can you expand on your obviously very clear and articulate feelings about that? It's really important that people understand this isn't political.
Yes. We have a fairly, partisan environment, maybe extremely so these days in U.S. politics, which is too bad. But I think bottom line, what is embodied in the term clean tech, right, which is reduce fossil fuels, improve performance, and lower cost, that's just a good business. That's just a good opportunity. And so from that standpoint, it's something that certainly a Republican, could get behind, and certainly a Democrat can get behind. I mean, there's all sorts of ancillary benefits, especially around climate change. But all that is just sort of, just check that box, because we're not charging for that. That's embedded in basically what we do and the savings that we generate for our community. So therefore, a lot of the contentious issues today that people argue back and forth on, well, we have those benefits with approach harvest takes, but the bottom line, it's done at a lower cost. And I think from that standpoint, that's something that everybody can get behind.
And I can't emphasize that more. I mean, some of the barriers to what technology exists now in terms of alternative energy, the barrier is cost. It's cost prohibitive. And what got me very excited about your vision for the company is that this is going to be something that's really cost effective. Let's just digress a little bit, but not really, about you're rapidly growing and you're only 4 years old. And it seems to me from, you don't have to spend much time on your website to really get the very strong message that you have a strong corporate culture and you have a vision for what that culture is. How will you be able to sustain that with rapid growth? I was part of a very rapidly growing social service organization, and we did a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and to acquire companies and yet marry them, if you will, to your corporate culture. How are you as the visionary in your team with Nathan? Is that a high value to you to maintain the integrity of the corporate culture?
Well, great question, and of course the answer to that is yes. That's a very important consideration and a very important goal for me, especially as CEO of the organization. I mean, the way I think about that is that, we have a lot of smart people at Harvest, and we've been able to attract smart people, and, the notion of bringing on smart people to your organization, that's something that I think most businessmen work hard at doing. But I think also you want to have a healthy culture. I think
right.
That's very important as well. And I think it's smart and healthy that leads to basically, a competitive advantage for your company. And that means you need to have really good, strong clarity. Everybody who works in the organization needs to understand, why we're in business, what we're doing as a business, understand the kinds of behaviors that we engage in as Harvest employees and associates. So I think one of my important jobs, along with our HR folks, is really to constantly reinforce the clarity, why we're in business, what we're doing, and so that to build the kind of culture where people enjoy coming to work, enjoy doing what they're doing, because I just think, at the end of the day, a business is just a collection of people, and how productive those people are basically certainly will determine the success of your organization.
Totally agree. I mean, it impacts everything. Happy employees are good employees, and it's not the other way around. It's really, if they're happy, they'll be good. And if you can create that corporate culture, which is challenging with the growth that you're experiencing, I know that from my own experience. So I high praise for that one. And as you move forward, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges in a rapidly growing company? There will be challenges. I know that there's when the natural gas prices, how does that impact your business? Highlight some of the key challenges you face and what you see at the 30,000 foot level.
Well, clearly there's a renaissance around natural gas driven by fracking and these advanced recovery techniques that are out there. And in one sense, it's putting pressure on the renewable energy folks. But on the other hand, natural gas is a clean burning fuel, and it's a domestic resource. And so, if we can use this as a way to replace oil in the transportation sector, then I think that ultimately will be a good thing. And then that would allow a company like Harvest, who produces biogas, we have the ability to strip off the small amount of CO2 that is in our biogas, make it the identical product to natural gas, and then you can compress that. Now you've got a compressed natural gas, and that basically is a transportation fuel. So I think the price signal in natural gas right now, that it is so much cheaper on a BTU basis compared to oil.
Right.
I think what's going to happen, you're going to start driving more uses for that, and hopefully that will end up in transportation. And then similar to, I think, not a great example of, look at corn ethanol, 10% of the gasoline I buy here, is basically with corn ethanol. We envision a world where 10% of natural gas can be from biomethane from anaerobic digestion facilities run by Harvest and others, and then blend that in as well. So I think ultimately with natural gas, I think long term, I think it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good thing too. And when I read, like I said, when I read a website like yours, it's like hope, possibility, and change. So why don't you take, I think it'd be great if you described how one of your companies, you've gotten big, where your facilities are, but one of the questions that I don't know if it was you or one of your staff submitted to me to talk about is describing your business in terms of sustainability using a city, for example, like Vancouver. Tell us what it works. Paint a picture for our listeners of how that works in that maybe model city for you.
Well, for instance, in the greater Metro Vancouver area, 22 member municipalities, with the largest being the city of Vancouver, and they are very progressive. And like many communities in North America, they basically are faced with high landfill disposal charges. They have, because they're a coastal city, they have to truck the waste a couple 300 miles inland. And then they have to then bear all that transportation cost, which is very expensive.
Right.
And then in effect, dump it in a landfill and get no beneficial reuse from that. So the notion of it's costly and it's not sustainable and it's not environmentally a positive thing to do, they basically said, let's begin the process of separating out the leaves, grass, and brush. And then from there, now they're beginning that process with the food waste. And together, leaves, grass, brush, and food waste represents, along with some wood, close to 30% of what we call garbage.
Right, right.
I mean, just to put it into perspective.
Totally.
So there's a lot of tons out there, and for communities that want to basically, do positive things, and from a sustainability standpoint, and in Vancouver's case, also lower costs substantially. We're about half the cost of going on these long haul trucks and going to a landfill way inland.
So a city likes the I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, it really is. It's the green trifecta. I feel like I should ring the bell. It's a very good sustainable business model, not just environmentally conscious and great for the planet. But to me, it's one of the most exciting things about it. And also the nuance in there to me is that you are not looking just for expansion at all. You are looking for sustainable partnerships where you really work with your other partner in what I call the new paradigm thinking, where it's not just about earnings per share, which are a good thing, but about how can we build a strong partnership where everybody wins. Would that be a fair assessment of your model?
Yeah, and well, we think about that because we work a lot with communities, and so in a way, the way we like to work with people is really it's a public-private partnership. In certain cases, you know, our facilities are leased from a municipal or governmental entity, and so they're in effect our landlord. And you know, we're dealing with these public goods. I mean, you know, our waste is generated as part of human civilization. So, you know, how to repurpose that and do it better than just putting it into a landfill. And so, again, I think many communities out there are very receptive to what we're doing, and that's why we see an exciting marketplace for kind of the technologies and services that we do at Harvest.
You know, there's an expression that I'm going to come up with eventually, because the one that I use is not good, but it's, you know, used to be the expression, a gateway drug. Well, there are gateway steps to sustainability for people, for human beings, for mainstream people like me. And the overpackaging, the unhealthy food system that we have, what you're doing is really all tied in with that, because one of the things we've noticed the most on this Mrs. Green journey in our family is that we have about a bag of garbage every week and a half. Because if you're buying food that's perishable and you're going to the farmer's market every week and you're not buying frozen food, it's like you're creating less waste, and it's healthy waste, if that makes sense. We're not filling the landfills with a bunch of garbage from bad food that we put in our bodies. So to me, this company, it's all connected, which makes it very sustainable for me. Okay, we have to take another short break. And when we come back, what I'd like to talk about are where do you see yourself in the next 4 to 5 years? I think that's a really good question. And how big can your industry get? And this energy, you know, how can it become? So stay here with us. We're talking to Paul Sillew, CEO of Harvest Power. Great conversations about hope for the planet. Stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best-in-class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand-new, sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. Our guest is Paul Sillew, CEO of Harvest Power, a rapidly emerging, just cutting-edge company that's dedicated to harnessing the full potential of organic materials by recycling energy and nutrients back into the local communities. Just an incredibly content-rich show from where I sit, Paul. Thank you so much for sharing what you're sharing. And I really do have to say this. You know, I interview lots of people, and read a lot, and I go to a lot of community events, and sometimes I get discouraged. I mean, it's daunting, some of the challenges that we face. The fracking issue is one of source of great controversy in our country right now. And when I read about some place like Harvest Power, it's like, keep on doing what you're doing, Mrs. Green, because you'll bring to light companies like this. So I had to do my little personal shout out there.
Thank you.
Before we go on to some of the challenges, I really did want to ask you before the show ends, when you are named a company, the top, like a top 100 anything, and in this case, a wonderful honor, a top emerging company of the year by the New England Energy Council, what type of impact does that have on you in terms of, we'll just say, did more companies contact you? Is it helping with business development, which I don't think would be a problem in your case? But what type of impact does it have other than being just intrinsically an honor? It's just an honor in and of itself.
Well, I mean, yeah, it certainly is an honor. And we've been, you know, selected now 3 years in a row as one of the top 100 clean tech companies in the world, and you know, the emerging company from the New England Clean Energy Council. So that's really great, but it's really it's an honor, and we're thankful that we've been recognized. But you know, we have a business to run. We've got, you know, we've got close to 500 employees at Harvest, and we're growing strong every year. We have a lot of opportunities. So at the same time, it's great to get these awards and honors. We gotta keep our eye on our business and continue to earn the trust of our customers and our partners on a, you know, on an everyday basis.
You have a big responsibility, which in that responsibility is preservation of the planet. So I am certainly doing a high five to your success, because it matters to all of us what you're doing globally. It's, to me, it's huge. So where do you expect to see? What is your crystal ball for another 4 years? And how big can this organic waste industry become?
Well, I think there's tremendous growth opportunities out there. We basically generate a lot of waste here in the United States, not only just at the municipal level, but you know, also at the commercial and industrial level as well. And as people see cost-effective solutions better than the conventional practice, which, as we've talked about, is pretty much landfilling, we are better economics than a landfill. And then there's a number of ancillary benefits from a sustainability standpoint. And to me, when you talk about sustainability, the best definition I heard was from Gro Harlem Brundtland, the former Prime Minister of Norway. She said, taking care of the needs of the present without sacrificing the needs of future generations. And so I think embedded in what Harvest is doing is that we're basically repurposing these organic waste materials. And so so long as there's people, there's going to be waste, and it's really, you know, how we deal with that and the way we deal with that. So from my standpoint, there's enormous growth opportunities out there.
Yeah, the future is really bright, and I can't imagine that it isn't. Another question that kind of leads me to is, with the growth and the opportunities for growth, how do you decide on which community to move to next? How do you vet a community, or what do you look at if you're going to partner and open another plant? I mean, what's your... There's got to be a vetting process, and I, of course, want to be helpful and have you come and start one in Arizona, in Tucson and Phoenix, because they're actually in Tucson. We are very progressive in the kinds of things we're doing. But what are some of the things that you look at in order to make a decision about expansion?
Well, clearly, population, there needs to be sufficient population there. You need to have a certain scale, economy of scale, a certain amount of tons that you want to process at any given location. And from there, it's helpful that the policies are in place where these materials can't, you know, have to be recycled, where, you know, so from that standpoint, it's a positive regulatory environment for
right.
a business like Harvest. And then from there that, that there's suitable sites. Site selection is important in our business, and having the ability to work with the community in a productive and positive way. And I just think that from the standpoint of any business, would be looking for that type of, you know, positive business community and where we go. And those are the key things.
Okay, in terms of, I'm just going to take it back a little bit also. In terms of the corporate culture, we talked about that and the challenges with growth of maintaining the integrity of what your vision is and the founder's vision is. I do a lot of consulting with companies, companies that pretty much sell a green product are not green from the inside out. Does that make sense? For example, if you are a Honda dealership and you sell all these wonderful fuel-efficient cars, if you have 70 employees that are massively consuming plastic water bottles and not recycling their paper and throwing ink cartridges in the garbage, it's not really, to me, the full circle, the cradle-to-cradle concept of sustainability. What do you personally commit to in terms of the corporate leader and the thought leader for the company? Because to me, our personal practices matter as much as what we do when we go to work. Does that make sense? It's a very personal question, but I would love it if you felt comfortable answering it.
Oh, no. I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think it goes back to, why does your organization exist? I mean, I really think that's a really
important...
Love that. That's a really important... And I think everyone has to understand that. And when they come to work, you know, at a company, there should be a well-articulated reason for why the company exists. And clearly, you know, how the company makes money, how it'll succeed, and what it does, all those other things are all embedded in that. And basically, under the why do we exist, I mean, this is something that we discuss with everybody. I mean, we exist to create a more sustainable future by helping communities better manage and beneficially reuse their organic waste. And so from that standpoint, you know, it touches, it impacts our culture. It attracts certain kind of people that are positively inclined and think about sustainability. And I think that, that's a really important thing. And we really try to emphasize that. And that's an important part of the kind of culture we're creating in Harvest.
Okay, in the closing minutes that we have, there's a few more questions that I'll have time for. Talk about, I was very intrigued by the phrase, the power of we. It never ceases to amaze me how much power we as human beings have that we don't use and almost have a victim mentality of they're doing that to us instead of we're the really ones in charge, and we just have to pump up the volume. Talk about the power of we and what that that phrase means in terms of the corporate culture of Harvest Power.
Well, when we're doing business, I mean, we're basically working with communities. I mean, we're basically processing these organic waste materials generated by communities in many respects. So the notion of it's not just all about us, but it's about the communities we operate in. It's about the taxpayers in those communities and also the generators of the organic waste in those communities and the fact of how we run our facilities, what we are all about as a company, what we stand for. Basically, we recognize the fact that we are in a very interconnected world, and as part of that just realization, we feel that, hey, it's important that we work together to accomplish this. It's not just going to happen in a vacuum. And so by the power of we, which we have as our corporate tagline, we're just basically just stating that. And I think it also it impacts the way we try to operate in all the communities that we're in throughout North America as well.
I mean, it's to me, that's the hope for the future. If people understand that there are no victims in this conversation, and let's just take our power back in whatever that looks like for you. And as obviously, I don't want to tell people what to think. I just want them to. Is there any conversation in the company about the power, importance, or value of social media as you go into the next 4 to 5 years?
We have a Twitter account. We have a Facebook page, and we like the power that social media gives. I mean, and clearly that symbolizes the power of we as well. So the ability to communicate and touch people today through social media is incredible. So it's something that we maintain as part of a Harvest, and we hope to continue to grow that part of our business.
I know. And I mean, to me, I am a social media environmentalist, so I get it. But for a lot of companies, I don't always see the value. I mean, I think the connection to the consumer is always good, but to me, there are people quietly making huge differences without having to Facebook and tweet and pin, and it gets to be all-consuming, so to speak, unless it's really purposeful and intentional. So, so far, what I see on your social media platforms looks good from where Mrs. Green sits. In the last closing minutes, are there certain things that you'd like to highlight that I might have missed in terms of challenges? Do you want to talk a little bit more about corn as ethanol versus corn as energy waste in using the entire, you know, the corn, all of the corn, as opposed to maybe just kernels of corn? I know that's a politically hot conversation, but you've addressed it well in some of the testimonials I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, our view with anaerobic digestion, basically, if you're going to be dealing with a wet organic waste material such as a plant, food, et cetera, we clearly view globally the investment has been around anaerobic digestion. In this country, you know, we've built out corn ethanol, and you've got this inherent conflict between, you know, food and fuel. And if you look at corn prices right now, I think they're close to record levels because of the drought and the bad yield and harvest this year. So these are the sorts of societal issues you have. And when you have the kind of policies that we've adopted around corn ethanol, which I fundamentally do not think makes sense. So my view is take a chapter out of what the Germans have done. They built thousands of anaerobic digesters, and they've basically put organic waste into these anaerobic digesters, and it's a huge source of renewable energy in the German economy, way in excess of wind and solar. So I think there's been successful models laid out. The anaerobic digestion technology is absolutely proven. It's not some experimental science project technology. And so if you have wet organics that you generate as part of waste, which we have a lot in the United States, we clearly view anaerobic digestion as a platform technology for that. And of course, it eliminates the whole mixing up of food and fuel, which we think is a fundamental flaw with corn ethanol.
And I have to say, I'm really glad you said that. It's like I've tried to keep the conversation more of me being the person questioning, but I think it's really an important distinction that's noteworthy. One of the things that I want to say about Harvest Power is that I would encourage is your continued use and really successful use of the YouTube, the power of YouTube, because your videos are instructive. And I think it's a complicated topic. People don't understand it, and then they shut down because it's like, this is really too complicated for me. And reaching the masses is what's going to tip the scale, because if you don't get people to start composting at their curb or in their homes, there isn't a business model. You know, it's just, this is the massive. So I would say to whoever's doing that piece, keep the YouTubes up, because they're not too long and they're content rich, they're informative, and they get the public to understand these complex issues. So that's Mrs. Green's two cents. What is the best way for people to stay in touch with you? I mean, there's harvestpower.com. It's a very interactive, it's an exciting website. So is that the best way that people can stay in touch with what you're doing and understand the importance of what you're doing? I can't say that enough. It's like, people, I hope you're listening to the show, and I hope you really get why it impacts your life, regardless of whether a Harvest Power is in your community. It's for the greater good.
Yeah, I think tracking the company on our website, www.harvestpower.com, is a great way. And thanks for your compliment on our YouTube. That's Nathan and our marketing manager, Meredith Sorensen, and they do a great job.
You know, we're constantly challenged here, because I obviously think my mission is very important to educate mainstream America and globally about sustainability on every scale. So the short videos that can be instructive about what you can do, I think they're really important. So do you have any, like, live, local, late-breaking, just tell us where you're going to be next, or things that you can reveal that are in the works?
Well, we you know, we basically have started up our energy gardens. They're doing great. We broke ground in another big facility, energy garden in Florida. And so, you know, slowly, you know, the U.S. communities around composting, it's well accepted on the energy gardens and the anaerobic digester. That's slowly coming. And we're committed. I mean, we think this is the best way, use of technology, anaerobic digestion combined with composting, to get the maximum value out of these organic waste materials. So, love to hear from communities that are interested in having harvest come, and we're looking for growth opportunities.
Great guest, Paul. I appreciate it. We'll stay connected. Sasha Lutzi, then from the NRDC next week, Antibiotics and Animals.